hard to focus, just to persevere and just to make it. But everything that's within your grasp, you gotta take it, you gotta go harder. Just dig deep inside you to find that method, that mode that wants that hunger to survive. Just to ride the grind and take it the way you gotta take it and never stop.
I came to win, yeah, I came to win. I came to win, yeah, I came to win. I came to win, yeah, I came to win. Can't no one stop me, yeah, bring it in.
What's going on, everybody? This is Kyle Hunter, and I'd like to welcome you guys back to the Diagnosis Success Podcast, where we talk about motivation, elevation, inspiration, and this is high-level conversation, as always, where we just bring on business-minded people that are successful in their respective fields. And today is a very, very dope day because I have one of my dear friends who he's just a phenomenal person. I've known him for several years. I'm talking about easily over 14 years. And he's just a dynamic person, businessman, father, and he goes by the name of Z. And I just want to shout him out real quick. What's going on, brother?
Kyle, thank you for having me. I think it's been at least 13 years since your first email hit my inbox.
Yeah, man. It's been a long time, man. It's been a long time. Like we've got years in, man. And it's crazy because, you know, like our relationship that we have, like for the listeners who are just hearing this for the first time, man, Z is such a good friend. It's like, you know, we could go time without speaking, but as soon as we pick up the phone, it's like we never skip the beat, you know, and that's what true friendship is, man. So, you know, definitely, man, I appreciate you, man. And I'm sure the listeners are really going to enjoy this podcast. So to start off, a lot of times I say people really don't know where you're going unless you know where you've been. So yep. For the listeners, can you just kind of just talk about your beginnings and how you got started?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for praising me right off the top. You put a smile on my face. As Kyle mentioned, everybody other than my mother and my wife calls me Z. The rest of the world knows me as Brian. I got my start in college. I did college radio at Illinois State University. I didn't actually want to do college radio. I wanted to do television. First week on campus, I visited the television station. I inquired how I could get involved, and the teacher who was overseeing the program, she said, yeah, no freshmen allowed. You got to be an upperclassman, so come back in 2 years. And I thought, this lady doesn't know how I operate. I'm not going to sit around for 2 years. I need to get involved immediately. So the radio station was in the same building on the same floor. I said goodbye to the TV station, walked my ass down the hall to the radio station. And I said, yeah, the TV station just told me that I can't do anything for 2 years. Like, what do you have for me? And as fate would have it, that weekend, they were looking for a DJ for the overnight shift, 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. And this was the first weekend, by the way, of my college experience. And they were like, are you sure you want to give up 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. the first Saturday night / Sunday morning of your college years? And I said, yeah, fuck it, why not? Right. So I immediately got involved in radio, and I DJed, and that ultimately led me to meeting the individual, Dave Mackley, who became a business partner. Dave had started a company called DJ Booth as a website. It was niche. It was for DJs, DJ tutorials, DJ playlists, mixer, headphone, turntable reviews. I found his site through a mutual friend. I sent him a cold email. This was before I graduated college while I was still doing radio. And I said, I'd love to work with you. I don't want any money. Don't give me a dime. Just let me use your platform to write album reviews, to write opinion pieces, to talk about the music that I love, and to run the interviews that I was conducting at the radio station. And Dave was like, yeah, sure, sounds good. I honestly couldn't believe it. Anyways, fast forward, DJ Booth ultimately ended up becoming a full-time job less than a year out of graduating from school. Wow. Wasn't making really any money. I mean, we were pulling in like $500, $1,000 a month. It was a hobby, but neither of us thought it was going to be a bona fide business. But yeah, I mean, this was 2005. Now 16 years later, DJ Booth's been around in total for 18 years. It's still running. Along the way, we created Audio Mac, which is a music and streaming discovery platform that we now reach 20 million monthly active users around the globe. And I really feel like I haven't worked for anybody ever at this point. I'm blessed. So that's the Cliff Notes version. I'm not going to make you wait there before having to ask another question for another 20 minutes. So pause. Your turn.
That's fire, because you know it's so many entrepreneurs out there that they start a business, they have the idea from the inception, but actually the execution, that's the hardest part, like actually seeing that come to fruition. So the fact that you was not able to actually be a part of one successful platform, but two, that's amazing within itself. That's truly amazing. Yeah, definitely, definitely. You know, just to piggyback, kind of segue back to DJ Booth, just culturally, I remember like when blogs were bigger, for lack of better words, you know, like everything transitioned, like blogs.
I'm not insulted.
You know,
they fell off.
You know, but the time where it's like it was booming, it was like the blogs had really became at that time the DJs, for lack of better word. It's like if you wanted to hear something that was dope, exclusive, and it wasn't watered down, like you went to the blogs, you know. So I feel like DJ Booth culturally is just a solid component of just the culture in general, and the fact that it's still around, like that's so dope. You know, one thing that I wanted to ask you, like as far as like the transition from that time period, because we saw a lot of artists break on the internet. I myself, like, you know, if it wasn't for platforms like DJ Booth, Two Dope Boys, a lot of these other ones, they gave a voice to a lot of dope artists. So in terms of like Kid Cudi, Wale, all these talented cats that they were birthed on the internet, how do you feel like the landscape of music has changed compared to then, compared to the present?
Well, I mean, first, those are the golden years. I never had so much fun professionally as I did between, I'd say, like 2008 and 2011. I mean, it was truly the wild, wild west. We're talking about pre-proliferation of streaming services. And, you know, it really gave the sense, everybody had the sense that if you got on either the right blog, or if you were able to develop the type of relationships necessary to get on all of them simultaneously, that sort of impact could really, really elevate a career quickly. It could get you signed, it could get you a tour, it could get you great management. It was limitless, right? And I know that in speaking with thousands of artists a month, still to this day, as that is luckily my job, That's not the feeling that many creatives have any longer. And so from the artist side, it's discouraging, because I feel like the blog era gave a lot of artists hope that simply does not exist anymore. Now that said, this is just statistically factual. There are far more artists who are making a far greater amount of money based solely on their music, thanks to streaming. And so the transition was, for the largest group of creators, a net positive. But I mean, culturally, like you pointed out, the feeling was different. I think the feeling now is that the streaming era reminds folks way too much of the pre-blog radio playlist, radio ad days, where it's largely dominated by the major label system. And that there are a few key gatekeepers that you have to make it through. And if you aren't signed to a big deal, or you don't know one of those few people, the likelihood that you're going to get the same looks that you were able to get during the blog era without those deals and without those connections is possible. Mm-hmm. So that is a bit disheartening. But we're trying to do a lot at AudioMac, and I'm sure we'll get to that during this conversation, that is the anti of everything that I just laid out, that is pro artist discovery, and that gives that same feeling that I know a lot of us had, you know, 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah, no, that's super dope. And that's needed too, because at the end of the day, it's like artists need that. Like they need that platform of discovery, because everyone wants to promote and push the hottest thing. But there's so many dope, talented artists out there that just don't have a voice. And if they have the platform, they can definitely get that exposure, you know, and get that leverage. So, I mean, that's really dope what you're doing. You know, I see the transition that took place from DJ Booth to Audio Mac. And I think Audio Mac is super dope too, because it provides that platform similar to like SoundCloud, other ones where, you know, people have the ability to stream music. They can get presented with new artists, because I see you guys have those playlists and things like that. So can you talk about a little bit more about the Audio Mac platform, and I guess pretty much what distinguishes it from the other streaming platforms that do similar things?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, Audio Mac is an artist-first, artist-friendly platform. We basically saw what artists were looking for in other platforms and in other services. And instead of coming up with some, you know, Fugazi subscription service where you're literally asking broke creatives to hand over money to use tools that should be available for free, we made everything available without limitations for free. We believe in empowering the creator so that they can then invest whatever capital they have at their disposal into everything else, into recording, into digital marketing. So there's no storage component. There's no analytical component. And I point this out because one of the companies that you specifically mentioned, it costs money to use their full professional services every month. Mm-hmm. Unlike Spotify or Apple Music or Tidal or Amazon, we're not a full catalog service. So we have in upwards of 170 music licensing agreements with major labels, with independent labels, with distributors, with aggregators. Some of those deals are only for the US music market. Some of those deals are for the entire world. Our goal is to systematically break into ex-US markets, like we have already in the continent of Africa. We are a top five app in five countries in Africa. And I'm talking top five app, not top five app in the music category, not mm-hmm. top five app in the free music app download category, but like period, like next to like Facebook Messenger and Gmail, Audio Mac is among those apps. And I think the reason for that is simple, right? So we're not a platform that is a full catalog, which means we're not a platform that necessarily is catering to a demographic that listens to music that skews older. So rock, jazz, spoken word, stuff like that. I mean, I love all genres, but the youth is not listening by and large to those genres. So we focus specifically on the genres that appeal to a younger demographic. Hip hop, rap, R&B, Afrobeats, Latin, reggae, reggaeton, dancehall, electronic and pop, right? So when you're appealing specifically to a younger target demo, you have to keep in mind what their life is like. And for the vast majority of the audience that those genres appeal to, they have limited disposable income. They likely do not have access to a credit or debit card. They might be using older technology, so older cell phones. They might be using cell phone plans that have a hard cap on data, or they might live in a space or area where they have limited or no access to Wi-Fi, right? Mm-hmm. And so keeping all of these important things in mind, our appeal is to a younger demographic. Our primary position is as an ad-supported platform with a premium tier. And so we want to get this younger community of listeners on board into the streaming ecosystem. Perhaps previously they only used illegal downloads as their mechanism for listening to music. Get them into the habit of using a service that they're paying for through listening to and seeing ads. Then, as they become hopefully enamored with the platform and they get used to using a platform for streaming, then we graduate them hopefully to become paid users for our premium side, which is half the price point of a Spotify or an Apple Music at $4.99. As this pertains to our ex-US audience, Africa in particular, all the points I just mentioned a second ago I want to really drive them home down there. Their infrastructure is very early. They're using older technology. They have hard caps on data. They have limited access to Wi-Fi. And so being an ad-supported platform that allows you to download and listen offline without having any impact on your data is huge. And in Africa in particular, illegal downloads and music pirating is still the number one way that they consume music, second to YouTube. And we all know, and I don't care if anyone from Google is watching or listening to this podcast, listening to music on your YouTube app is like the worst experience ever. So, I mean, that's our in, and that's what separates us from the competition.
That's amazing. And to, you know, just kind of really put that in perspective, that in Africa, like, you guys are like a top app, like, that's big, like, that's huge, you know, just like, I mean, congrats on that, man. Really, congrats, bro. Like, that's major. You know, one thing I wanted to ask you about too, because I know a lot of times, like, people, they tend to highlight the successes, but they don't talk about, like, the bumps along the way. And we all know that there's no success without failure. Like, you have to hit those road bumps and overcome those. So can you talk about, for the listeners, some of the road bumps or challenges that you've had along the way, like, just in terms of this industry and, you know, trying to get to where you're at today?
Of course. Yeah, I think, you know, with DJ Booth in particular, I never sought out a career in digital media. When I went to school, I got a traditional communications degree. I never learned how to tackle the wild, wild west that is digital media. And so I had to just figure shit out on my own as I went along. And I say that to say, part of being successful is literally just trying things, knowing before you even try them that a great many of them will probably fail. And so, you know, there was a period of time where DJ Booth's focus was on artist discovery through highlighting individual songs. And that's what we did. And that brought in the vast majority of our page views, which brought in the vast majority of our revenue. That's what specifically allowed us to expand over time and hire editors and hire writers and hire photographers. Over time, we felt like once streaming was becoming a bit more popular, the writing was on the wall. People were not going to come to blogs and websites specifically to read about songs and stream songs. They were just going to go straight to where the songs were available for stream. And we decided, rather than to continue to do what was working at the time, let's get out ahead, rip the Band-Aid off, and try a bunch of new stuff. And some of this stuff worked and some of it didn't. Like, we tried to do news that failed spectacularly, because in order to successfully do news, you have to have tens of writers who are available 24/7 to keep up with the pace of news in a social media age. And it was too hard. You know, unless you're the first to break a story or you're able to deliver that coverage in a unique way, you're not going to get any SEO. Unless you're spicy and controversial, you're not going to get any engagement on social. And at that point, then you're contorting and you're manipulating the story to such a degree, it now feels clickbaity and inauthentic. Mm-hmm. And now, at that point, now you're so far removed from your original intention, it doesn't feel good anymore. And so we tried news. It didn't really work. We tried like these breaking features, which were super short form, with the intention of publishing more content and quicker. That didn't really work. We scrapped all of it, and we decided to go with less content in hopes that that less was more. So the old quality over quantity approach. And that won. That was the winning ticket. That's what allowed us to continue to keep the lights on. That's what attracted brands to want to work with us. That's what attracted other companies who are looking for quality content to hire us as their media house. Mm-hmm. For 2 years, DJ Booth was contracted to write content and produce video content for Tidal. We worked with Universal Music Group, with Red Bull, Royalty Exchange, TuneCore, just a litany of companies who operate either in the music space or around the music space, who were looking for the same thing that we were trying to do, which was not blow you away with 50 pieces of content a week, but like 10 to 15, and they were all solid.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. And like you said, you know, quality over quantity. Like, I think, like, especially in this digital age, since everything moves so fast, it's like people get caught up in the quantity. It's like, oh, I just got to post. I got to post. I got to do this. And the quality declines. So, you know, like you said, at the end of the day, if you've got that content that actually resonates with people, man, that goes a long way. That goes further because people will revisit that, you know, and they'll say, oh, this is great. It's not microwavable content. Like, it's actually solidified. So that's super dope, man. And when you think about it from a business perspective, it's low-key genius. You know, like, you know,
there were times where I felt like this is definitely not working either. So, I mean, I don't know that I ever felt like that. I will say this, though. I don't think that we had another play. Right. I feel like the two options were continue to go down the path of least resistance, try to milk what we were doing for as long as we could possibly do that for. And then just, you know, hop on the horse and ride off into the sunset.
Right.
Or change it up, knowing full well it would have a dramatic initial impact on revenue generation. It might mean that we have to let some team members go, but we'll be able to keep the business running. We will be able to keep the brand alive. We will ensure that all the content we published up to that point remains available online. It's archived. It's not going to drift off into the ether of the internet. And so, yeah, I mean, it's easy for me to say all of this now, right? Looking back on it. But at the time, I mean, I second and third guessed every decision that we made. But ultimately, I'm comfortable with those decisions, and we're still around. So obviously, it wasn't a horrific decision.
Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely, man. Calculated risk. You know, it turned out all right. So that's a great thing. I want to ask you another question in terms of like musicians in this present landscape that want to be successful musically, like for the independent artists that are just starting their careers, what are some gems that if you were an independent musician, you would want to know, like gems that, you know, you could drop on them?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just going to basically go off the top of the dome from all the stuff that I tweet regularly about. I think the first thing that a lot of artists need to understand is you're not competing with other artists. What you're competing for is the free time of the consumer. We now live in an on-demand attention economy, okay? And so every consumer, it varies, but they have a finite amount of time on a daily and weekly basis to consume content, period. Not just music, but video, music, social media, politics, porn, etc. Okay? And so you're competing with all of that, but there's only 24 hours in a day. There's an ever-growing amount of shit you can listen to and watch and read, but mm-hmm. the amount of time that you have to do it in is not going to change. And so instead of getting tied up into the, I make better music than that artist, my album was better, I'm more attractive, I have more followers on social media, that's not your ticket forward. What your ticket forward is creating a compelling work or an entertaining work or an interesting work that has body, that has story, that allows you to convince a person to take that finite amount of time and dedicate it to you and essentially give you their attention and their money. Okay. And so that's how artists should operate. Other gems I often give out are, you know, there's this belief that if you're talented, that the thing that's holding you back is you don't have the right manager, or you didn't sign to the right distributor, or you're not with the right record label. All of these things absolutely can help. Absolutely. If you sign with the right label who makes you a priority, and you have a great veteran manager that can open doors and make introductions, and you have this pipeline to essentially what is a line of credit, right? Money. No doubt about it. These things can accelerate a career, but they're not the meal ticket most artists think that they are. Just like you can sign to a record label and that label can advance your career, that deal can also stifle your career, and you can mm-hmm. be placed on the back burner and never heard from again. Mm-hmm. And just like the right manager can open the right doors and make the right connections, the wrong manager can fuck up your career forever. And here's the difference. You only get one career. That manager can go take on a new artist, right? And And so you have to be cognizant that not all relationships, not all deals, not all setups are one and the same. Each one is isolated, it is siloed. You have to view it through that lens and be patient. And that's like probably the third gem I would point out is all of us are inherently impatient. And it's so hard to be patient when you're online. And again, you see people in your space having all this success. And the perception is that it's coming to them way faster than it's coming to you. And there's a bit of jealousy naturally. And I don't think anybody should be embarrassed by those feelings, right? That's just how we are wired as humans. But try to, if possible, to resist that temptation, to see others succeeding and then assuming that that is somehow a reflection on what you're not doing. Have blinders on. Focus on how can I create a better product to make my story and my image more attractive to a larger audience, and then slowly build that audience one brick at a time. And I know that for someone who is in a situation where they need money, they have a family, they have bills to pay, they're trying to make music work as more than a hobby while holding down multiple potentially jobs, it's really hard to hear that, right? But what it comes down to is, do you want a career in this space or do you want to have a moment? And if you want to have a moment, by all means, if something comes across your table that presents you with more money than you thought you'd ever be able to earn in music, take it. But if you are long for a career in this industry, remind yourself to be patient. That is what will get you to where you want to be.
Those were a lot of gems, brother. Those were a whole lot of gems, man. Like straight up fire. And I know the listeners will definitely appreciate that. And you know, it's something that someone told me a long time ago. OG told me, he said, you know what? Always remember this. He said, do you want to be heard or do you want to be understood? And those are two different things. And I think it kind of segues off of what you were saying, like in terms of like musicians trying to make it today. It's like, you know, you can throw content out there and just throw it, you know, and see if it sticks to the wall. But do you really want people to appreciate and understand your brand? Because once you get a core following, man, you just grow it and it elevates your platform and it takes it to the next level. So that's critical. It's like, you know, always making sure that the quality is there. You know, don't worry about what people are doing because, you know, like you said, social media is such a positive, but it can also be very damaging at the same time. It's like people constantly in a state of that competitive nature. Oh man, I'm falling behind. You know, oh, so-and-so just got a Pepsi commercial. You know, oh, they got this brand and what am I doing? Like, you know, you feel like you're falling behind. But to your point, keep those blinders on. It's like at the racetrack, the horses got on blinders for a reason. They're not looking to the left. They're not looking to the right. It's just what's in front of you. Like what's down there. Keep that finish line in mind for yourself, you know? So,
you know, we ran an interview on AudioMac World, which is the editorial component of the AudioMac app experience with the rapper AJ Tracy. He's from the UK. And one question in particular stuck out with me, which was just the plight of the independent artist in today's day and age and how difficult it is to battle perception. And he talked about how he has been an extremely successful independent act. He's never signed directly to a major label. And, you know, he's really proud of that because it's so hard to be successful for an extended period of time as an independent. And how he knows if he goes like a couple months without releasing new music or creating content specifically for social media, he gets messages and sees conversation on social about how he fell off. And it just, you know, he knows it's like, I'm paying all my bills through music. I'm able to help my parents like buy a house through music. Like I'm a fucking success story. And because I didn't show up on your goddamn timeline, you know, enough over the last 2 months, I fell off. And so the expectations now are so far removed from reality people just don't understand how the industry works because they think out of sight, out of mind. If you're not constantly in the conversation, if you're not a trending topic every other day, that you're somehow a failure. Like, how did we get here? It is unhealthy from a human perspective. But what troubles me the most is fans forget how unhealthy it is from a creative perspective. If you're already disheartened because you're not getting enough new music from your favorite artist, imagine what kind of mind space the artist is in, knowing that now they're also having to create under extra duress because you're not creating fast enough for your audience. You're not out there enough on social media for them. It's a terrible place to be in.
Yeah, you know, and I saw something online in regards to Kendrick, and people were kind of like dragging him, like saying, oh, you know, he doesn't put out enough music. And it's crazy how the court of public opinion is so fickle, right? It's like you're only as good as your last mistake or your last record, right? So it's like, all right, you know, they forget very quickly. And to your point, it's like I could put on Nas Illmatic and I can just play that, you know, all day. You know what I mean? I could put on Jay-Z, The Blueprint. Doesn't matter when it came out. Doesn't matter when it dropped. Like, it's timeless. So it's like putting out classic timeless music now. And even though if you space it out, the public consumption is so hungry. It's like, oh, you ain't putting out enough music. You fell off, man. You know, it's like, so it's crazy. It's not healthy, to be honest with you, you know?
You mentioned Kendrick, right? So before he was a trending topic this past week, I think LeBron had tweeted out, like, I miss Kendrick, right? Mm-hmm. First of all, LeBron, he's not dead, okay? he just hasn't released a new album in 4 years, okay? He's very much, as far as I know, alive. Bless up, right? That's one. Number two, if you miss him so much, Section 80, Good Kid, Mad City, mm-hmm. To Pimp a Butterfly and Damn are all available at a moment's notice on streaming services. This man opened up his career with four complete rock solid, either classic or arguably classic works. Okay. At this stage, and I know it sounds ridiculous to say, he doesn't owe anybody anything. If he wants to take another 5 years, if he wants to do a D'Angelo and go like 15 between albums, mm-hmm. he has earned that right. Now, I would say if you're not a Kendrick Lamar, if you're someone who is still very much a developmental and emerging talent, you don't have Kendrick's fan base, you don't have Kendrick's following. By the way, notice how I said fans and following, those are not the same things.
True. And I'm gonna have to, I want you to break that down too when you get a chance for people.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you're not at that stage yet, by all means, like, you know, you should be producing content at a faster clip. Not faster in the sense that you're willing to sacrifice quality over quantity just so that something is out in the marketplace, but you're at least considering the value of dripping, keeping the faucet running more mm-hmm. frequently. Once you get to Kendrick stage, you can afford to be more patient. You can afford to take more time because you've built up that credibility. You can lean on that back catalog. Your fans at that stage are willing to stick with you, obviously. To answer your question, the difference between a fandom and a following is, a fandom is willing to invest not only their time, but their money in you. A following, your timeline content, right? All they had to do to support you in that capacity was click follow. And when they scroll past, if they see something that you posted, great. That doesn't mean that they're going to listen to your music. I mean, artists are shocked. They'll put out an album and they have more followers on social media combined than first week streams. And they think like, how is that possible? I'll tell you how it's possible. These folks might find you entertaining. They might find your personality to be engaging or humorous or witty or sarcastic, whatever the case may be. Some of them might not even know you're a recording artist. And then when it comes time to releasing an album, you haven't done a great enough job through your social media commentary, posting, etc., to convince them to hop over to their favorite streaming service, which is hopefully Audio Mac, mm-hmm. and press play. Now, a fan has notifications set. A fan knows when you're going to be in town. A fan wants to support you, even if it means spending extra. So like, for instance, I love Bandcamp. Great platform, right? Bandcamp offers digital downloads. It's 2021. No one's buying the fucking digital download to listen to the MP3s. Mm-hmm. But they're supporting the artists. And if that means you get a zip file with MP3s, awesome, right? A lot of people love vinyl, not necessarily because they have a turntable and because they want to listen on vinyl, although I love listening on vinyl and it is the greatest Audible experience. They're doing it because they want to invest in you. They want to support you. Their purchase is to show you that they love you. Your music matters to them. It's not because, and it's because the vinyl is a tangible item, unlike a digital download that just like mm-hmm. exists in space.
Right.
That's the difference. And like, that's what you have to keep in mind. How can you convert someone who just thinks that you're entertaining on social media into someone who lives and breathes your every waking moment, song, release, album, project, mixtape?
Definitely. And you know, I'm glad you broke that down, because I was having that same discussion with someone maybe like a month ago, and they were like, I don't understand it. I go on social media, I go on Instagram, Twitter, I see these people have millions of followers. And then when the album drops, you know, they'd be lucky if they move like 30,000. They're like, what? The numbers less. Don't make sense. Right. So it's like, you know, it's all smoke and mirrors. It doesn't matter if you have 2.5 million followers, if your ROI is just 30,000. Right. Like, you know, yeah. it makes more sense.
It looks worse.
Right. What looks worse? You know, or if you're an independent artist and let's say, hey, you got 15,000 followers, but you're able to move 10,000. That's more of a success, you know, because you're looking at the proportion and saying, hey, you know, the majority of the people that are fans of me, genuine fans, they're purchasing the product. So that's definitely dope, man. That speaks value, man. That speaks value.
And it's because everybody is caught up in the perception of success more than the actual success. Mm. You know, if you were to poll 10 aspiring artists and ask them, would they rather have 5,000 followers but a guaranteed 5,000 sales, or 500,000 followers without the promise of any sales, right? You just leave it up to chance. Most in this day and age would take the following with the larger opportunity for clout. They would take the 500,000. They would probably justify it and say, well, if I have that sort of audience, it'll open up more worlds for me so that I can build a larger following than 5,000. But you got to start somewhere. You got to start at ground zero. Mm-hmm. Everyone is impatient because of that. And then they find themselves in this awkward position where they are using the social media following to get a deal, but the following is not indicative of the support they will receive after they sign the deal. And then they release the music with the label partner, but there's no response because there was never the following to begin with. And now you're stuck in this terrible deal with no actual following. And so what do you have?
And you know, actually, in that scenario, I think they both deserve each other, because it's like getting in a bad relationship and both are lying. It's like, you know, the artist is fake followers. The label is greedy because they like that. They want to sell yeah. music. So everybody deserves each other at the end of the day. You know?
Fair enough. I like that.
Of course. You know, well, one thing I want to ask you, do you think social media is hurting artists right now, man? And when I say that, I mean, in terms of when I think about like back in the days when I listened to like LL, and you know, vintage LL and stuff like that, Pete Rock, CL Smooth, social media wasn't such a big thing back then, right? There was more mystique to artists. It was like when that CD dropped and going to the store and peeling back that plastic and reading the credits, and just, it was an experience, right? And it's like, it wasn't like you can go on Twitter and see them ranting. It was like, you know, when they had an interview, you would catch it because it was special, right? So going back to supply and demand. Now it's like everyone has so much access to artists, and a lot of times they're just tweeting nonsense, and it's like, oh, that's how you think? Like, I like yeah. your music, but you're a nut job. Like, do you, you know, like, do you feel that social media can can kind of hurt artists nowadays more so as compared to back in the days where it was more mystique? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so there's definitely pros and cons, right? So let's go through the pros real quick because I want to start off on a positive note, right? So artists today have a wide array of tools at their disposal that artists of yesteryear were not fortunate enough to have. Social media allows artists to directly connect with fans, which is super important. And so that is an advantage that if you know how to do it correctly, it could be a net positive. Social media also allows artists to, in real time, gauge feedback. Now, some of that feedback might not come in the format you'd like for it to, but you know, back in the day, like a record label would do like a test print or send around a sampler, right? And they were looking for feedback, like, should this be the single? Should that be the single? Before they actually committed serious marketing dollars and they had to consider the cost of mass production and distribution and physical goods and whatnot. And so now you can get away with doing all of that, like essentially market research on the cheap, right? Mm-hmm. Using the existing audience that you have. So there are definitely some advantages of social media. I think the downside is the mystique gone? Yeah, but I don't necessarily think that's such a bad thing because I think that fans now in today's day and age want to connect with other people, humans, right? And back in the day, like artists always felt like larger than life entities. And to some degree, superstars still feel like that. But for everyone else, like, They're just people. It just so happens that their occupation is musician or rapper or singer. And so, you know, to that end, I think that there's a connection that can happen that wouldn't be possible otherwise. Where social media is awful and toxic is artists don't recognize that, like, you to your point, every time that they open their mouth, they utter an opinion or a thought or a suggestion, they're potentially turning people off from pressing play on their music. People who are either fans and decide that they no longer want to be fans, or people who are prospective fans who now you've lost them from ever wanting to join your train ride ever. And so, you know, especially in this woke generation, where even like the most innocent, non-malicious thought or opinion could be uttered. If it's not done in a careful way, you run the risk of sabotaging your career, like for no reason, like for absolutely no reason. So I always tell artists, like, when you're going to be active on social media, and I encourage artists, especially who are at the beginning stages of their career, to be active, come up with a social media strategy. How do you want to appeal to your audience? And how does this help you tell your story or convey who you are as an artist alongside your music? Think about it, like, have a plan.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true, man, because, you know, one thing we do realize is that cancel culture is real, right? Like, you know, you've got these people out here and it, you know, they're ready to cancel you over the least little thing. You could wake up in the morning and post that you're eating Raisin Bran. They're like, oh, cancel him, we don't like Raisin Bran. Like, it gets crazy. It's like, what are we talking about right now, you know? So
yeah.
You know, it's crazy, man.
I mean, and I'm going to be honest with you. I mean, as a white male who has for 18 years now operated in two industries, predominantly working in a black space, I am always, like, almost subconsciously at this point, as I type something out, going, could anyone possibly interpret that as me being racist? And I mean, it's important to always consider your audience. It's always important to consider how your words could potentially affect the primary target of your message. But at the same time, I mean, I don't think most people are going through that thought process, which is why they're getting into so much trouble. Right. They're not considering, like, one or two words, innocently or not, could have that effect. Mm-hmm. I wish more people would be that thoughtful and more considerate. Yeah. I'm not praising myself. I'm just saying I think the social media experience would be way more enjoyable than it is now if that was the case.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, I think about Barry Gordy and how they had artist development. So these things that really don't happen a lot, you know, you still see it in certain camps. Like, you know, you look at TDE, you can tell that there is a family culture there, that they do put thought behind their artists. But, you know, back in the day, it was a thing. You know, the Jackson 5 or all these groups, they were groomed. They knew how to present in public. They knew how to present for the media. And, you know, I mean, things have changed. So that's a gem for all the artists out there that's listening. Definitely be more cognizant of how you present and what you say. And don't just always shoot from the hip and, you know, oh, well, if you don't like it, don't follow me. Like, you know, you're potentially just damaging your career over nonsense, right? Because, you know, we all right. know that you might wake up the next morning and say, damn, man, I shouldn't have said that, right? So, you know, better to be more strategic with your approach.
Yeah, you hit on it too. I mean, you know, not only was artist development more impactful back in the day, there's more time and attention put toward it, but there was that incubation period between signing and your first like real public appearance, where you not only focused on becoming a more sound and structured creative, whether that be like vocal training or writing development. But the label and the label's team members, like the publicist and the management and whatnot, they really sat down with you and helped you strategically maneuver around like interviews and how to conduct yourself with the media and how to train and prepare for going on tour. And a lot of these things just don't happen anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's because of the speed with which everything operates. You throw out a song on Audio Mac, it gets picked up on TikTok, the shit blows up, you know, 30,000 people are doing a dance, you just went viral, you're caught completely flat-footed, you have no plan in place for what would happen after you went viral because you never thought it would be possible. Four record labels approach you, they all offer you deals, more money than you ever thought you'd ever get in your life, you take one of them. You'd never once created a full-length body of work, but now you just signed a deal that has three albums and two options. So now you've committed yourself to five full bodies of work, and you have like three songs to your name. And now like you're so far removed from where you were a few months prior. And the whole time, like you've never considered, all right, you know, how do I conduct myself on social media as a popular signed artist? Should I go back through and like delete all my controversial old shit? Right. You know, like it just moves too fast now. I don't envy artists from that perspective.
Yeah, man, it's changed. It's drastically changed, man. Well, you know, that's definitely a dope gem, man. I had another question for you, man. Well, it's more of something I ask all the guests on this podcast. And that question is simply put, what is your mantra? Like, what is the mantra for Z? Like, throughout your whole life, something that you just kind of mold over in your head. Like, mine is persistence wears down resistance. Like, that's mine. Like, regardless of what the obstacle is, I'm a hammer at it. I'm a chisel away. Like, you know, I don't see it as a problem. I see it as an opportunity. So what's your mantra?
Well, first of all, mine doesn't rhyme, and I'm not going to deliver it as eloquently as you just did, probably because you're the MC and I'm not. I would say mine is be good to people. I think the thing that it's very easy to forget in the internet day and age is that you're communicating with another human being. When you don't see someone in the flesh, there's a tendency to be either intentionally or unintentionally disrespectful or brief. Or unkind. And from a very early age, anyone who mattered to me instilled the way that you get far in this life is by being good to people, and always go out of your way to be good to people. What does that mean? It depends on the context with which the situation you're in. For me, being good to people means respecting their craft, respecting their time, trying my best to email back everybody who reaches out, trying my best to listen to as much content that is submitted to me, giving artists a chance who probably emailed me thinking that they would never hear back from me, spending a lot of my time and goodwill on social media, trying to educate artists in this space. Just be good to people. Just be a human. I think if artists took that approach in fan building, they would be shocked at how quickly more people would be on their bandwagon, because the fan would realize, or at least think that, the perception wise, that there's an investment being made just because of kindness. But just be good to people.
Definitely, man. Now that's powerful, man. And you know, there's a saying that I love. It says, you know, being humble will take you places that money can't. So that's priceless. It's like, you know, just treat people like you want to be treated and pay it forward. So look, man, I appreciate the time, bro. This is a super dope interview. I guess in closing, man, just talk about all the dope things that you got going on. What's going on presently at Audio Socket and on the horizon for DJ Booth, all of that. What's going on, man?
Well, I mean, the thing that I'm most excited about right now is just our growth at AudioMac. I think when you look at just the past 2 years, we've scaled up from like 15 employees to more than 50. We opened up a satellite office in Nigeria. We've signed multiple licensing deals ex-US that have brought our services to a variety of countries that we previously weren't available in. We just recently soft launched in January AudioMac World in the AudioMac app. So now users can both read about and discover artists in the same space. You don't have to navigate out of the app. You don't have to open up a second browser window. You don't have to toggle between apps. You can literally contextualize the discovery process by listening to and reading about artists in the same space. Going from DJ Booth and for years seeing folks talk about how no one likes reading anymore and knowing that just fundamentally not true. People love to read. People love to read about artists and music. What they don't like doing is having to leave social media to do it. And that's if that's the only place that they're congregating, it makes it difficult. On a personal level, before the pandemic hit, I was doing a bunch of traveling, doing a lot of public speaking, educational awareness seminars. I loved being out on the road, connecting with people. And hopefully, if we return to normalcy in full sometime soon, I'd love to get back out and do that more. I can convey information on social media, but I think it's a lot more powerful to do it in a real world live setting. And after being cooped up for the past year plus, I think we could all use some human connection, engagement, and interaction. I want to give out some hugs. I would love to give out some big bro hugs and hands where you can see them, lady hugs. And right. If my wife's listening, you have nothing to worry about. These are completely consensual hugs, and it's good for the mental health of both parties engaged in the hug.
Well, look, I know you're going to come to New York soon, man. So we definitely going to link. And there was one thing that I forgot to ask you, man. Yeah. So what are your top five hip hop albums of all time, in your opinion? Top five, well, that are alive.
Five of them are on this wall here. Okay. So we're going to go with Nas Illmatic. We're going to go with Dr. Dre's The Chronic. We're going to go with Wu-Tang Clan, Enter the Wu-Tang. We're going to go with Biggie's Ready to Die. It's not on my wall, but I'm going to go with Jay-Z Volume 2. I chose the Blueprint because I like the cover better. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you can't go wrong with any of those.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, people keep on asking me when they see the back and they're like, is Travis Scott's Astroworld really one of your top albums? I'm like, absolutely not. I just love the cover art. So that's it. No shots fired at Travis. Great art, fine album, not an all-time favorite.
Definitely. Definitely, man. Well, look, man, we appreciate you, Z. Thank you for your time as always. And once again, this is Kyle Hunter with Diagnosis Success Podcast. We appreciate you guys for listening. Enjoy your week.
Thanks, Kyle.
Anytime, Z.
So much that it seems wrong. Never gonna lose, that's my theme song. I'm just a kid in the jeans on. Back to reality, ain't no one bad as me. See, they be doubting, but I keep on actually pushing. Not giving up, that's how I give it up. Pushing, not giving up, that's how I give it up. That's how I give it up.